Welcome to Reading Deadly Troubadours, the weekly podcast where I, Brent Thomas, read my novel, Deadly Troubadours. Let's begin, shall we?
Chapter 33, Demetrius Tate, Origin 7. The crone smiled as she inspected her machine one final time as Demetrius strapped down the magically silenced girl. She regretted having to silence her new body, but its endless tirade of curses and pleadings had grown quickly tiresome. The crone wondered, once the body was hers, would the spell be in place? Was the magic attached to the flesh or to the soul? In the past, she had cultivated devotees worthy of receiving her spirit, and more than willing to do so, but replacing them had grown tiresome, and now all she had was her pet. So it seemed today would bring added insight to the workings of magic. It was such insight that had driven her to create her first such machine long ago. She had longed to escape death, but had grown convinced that death was the one power that was inescapable. However, it could be cheated and avoided. That was the realization that had led her to the designing of a machine that could transport souls between bodies. As her original body aged, weakened, and deteriorated, she put her plan into motion. The design itself was simple. Two tables, each linked to a power source, namely vats of sacrificial blood. Blood was an element of life, and life offered power that no other sacrifice could match. The linking was accomplished by cables of pure metals. Through trial and error, she had come to prefer silver, both to link the tables to their power sources and to each other. It aided not only in the transference of magical energy, but also in the smooth exchange of souls. For her first transfer, she had used iron. The experience had been quite painful. It had taken her over a decade to feel truly at home in that second body. The linking of the tables to their power sources was simple enough, just a direct line of cable. However, linking the tables themselves required another element, star crystal. A soul cannot simply enter a body already occupied, nor can it force out the current occupant. Souls are nothing if not territorial. However, she had discovered a method where a soul could be coaxed out of its current habitations if there is an unoccupied, soulless body for it to enter. Therefore, if she projected herself out of her body, it was possible to compel another soul to project itself into her former housing. Rather than just exist in the ether, the crone preferred to arrange for temporary housing for her own soul while she waited for her target to shed itself and take up residence in her discarded form. The star crystal, the centerpiece of the cables connecting the twin tables, was where her soul would rest as her magics coaxed the girl to leave her youthful frame for the withered husk the crone now inhabited. Demetrius served many roles in the process. Chiefly, he would provide the manual labor the machine required, butchering and draining the animals of the blood needed to serve as fuel for the magic. He would also make sure both participants, willing and unwilling, were correctly positioned on the tables with all leads attached. He would also serve as safety monitor, ensuring that nothing would happen to her physical form during the period she was outside of either body. And, while she was adjusting to her new form, he was also to serve as a secondary spellcaster, using his knowledge of sigils to aid in the efficient consumption of fuel. It was also a possibility that he would need to assist in compelling the girl to leave her body, should she prove exceptionally resilient. The crone had only needed such aid on one other occasion, but did not wish to run the risk of regretting its absence. Needless to say, while her soul was outside her body, she was particularly vulnerable. The past several months had been preparation, ensuring Demetrius was under her thrall. Fear could indeed be stronger than love when it came to guaranteeing loyalty. She smiled at her lackey. he returned a look that was a mixture of adulation and trepidation. It would soon be time to begin. Demetrius was anxious. Today would be the day that all that he had learned would be put to the test. It had been a sleepless night. Today had required a great deal of preparations. He had at last been allowed into some of the hidden confines of the house where she kept her animals, small, sickly things in cramped cages, kept alive more by her magics than by proper care. Still, it was enough to provide his master with adequate meals. He had tried to determine whether or not the beasts he found had always been there, or had they been stalked while he was finding the girl. In the end, he decided he didn't care. He had been promised that after he filled both vats with the precious liquid contained within the animals, he could feast on the unneeded flesh. It took two of the small pigs to fill the vat that was connected to the table that was to house his master. It was a simple matter to magic the unthinking brutes to sleep, harder to drag their thick bodies from their pens to the staging room. A quick knife slash across the first pig's throat started the torrential rush, and he watched as the sigils engraved inside the vat disappeared beneath the rising level of blood. The secret of eternal life was being drowned before his eyes. The stream slowed to meager drops, and he repeated the process of retrieving and draining with the second pig. He wondered how difficult it would be to prepare the pigs for eating, and if he would have time to do so with all there was to do. He knew he should ready the girls' vats before he even thought about eating or sleeping. The preparations took well into the evening. Other than the fitful few hours underneath the bramble bush, he had not slept in 3 nights. His eyes felt dry and scratchy, and his muscles and joints ached. His stomach felt queasy, and he could not tell if the origin was fatigue, hunger, or apprehension. If today's events did not go as planned, then his master would be terrible in her wrath. In the present, her smiling continued. The blood in both vats was at the appropriate level. If anything, her little servant had overfilled them in his desire to please. He trailed a few steps behind her as she inspected the connections where the silver wiring would separate to be attached to the 6 nodes of the body. Wrists, soles of the feet, heart, and forehead. The girl lay silently on her table, clad in a thin nightgown. Her eyes watched them with hatred as croning creature strapped her down. For now, she was magically stilled, but that might not last until the ritual's completion. The straps would keep her from shaking loose the wires. Demetrius listened carefully as his master gave instructions on how and where each clamp should be attached. A mistake could cause great delay in acclimating to her new body. She attached each clamp to the nodes. She then removed them and had Demetrius reattach each clamp to its proper location. She praised his successful completion of the task and then had him do it again. He needed to have their placement memorized. She would not be able to double-check her own leads, but the clamps were marked with the appropriate sigils, and he was capable. She was satisfied. Before she moved on, she paused to address her new body's current host one final time. Thank you for turning this frame into something so desirable. I can understand that you are loath to leave it for this aged husk you see before you, but I can guarantee that I will make greater use of your body than you ever could. It truly does deserve better than to belong to a simple farm girl. It deserves me. What is left of this body I now wear will be more than adequate for a short lifetime of milking cows. The crone made her way across the hot stone floor and lay on her own table. Demetrius paused beside the girl. Her eyes, the only part she could freely move, watched him in hatred. He avoided her eyes as much as possible. Demetrius, it is time. His master's voice summoned him to her side. She had finished the final inspection of the star crystal. was the shape of a globe about the size of a honey melon. Its value was more than the entire village. She had used it for her last three transfers and almost considered it a friend. She gave it one final pat, making sure to avoid the silver wires that crisscrossed and laced around the globe's surface. She lay down carefully on the hard wooden table that would likely serve as this body's final bed. She doubted it would survive much longer without her magics. She waited as her servant attached the leads of the silver wires to her wrists, right, then left, feet, left, then right, heart, and finally head. There was no need to strap down this body. Even if it survived long enough after the transfer for the girl to maneuver it, the husk was still too frail to be a threat. "Check the leads," she whispered. Her excitement was mounting. Soon she would be young and beautiful once again. In reverse order, he made sure the clamps were properly attached. As he finished, she ever so lightly gripped his hand with her fingertips. "When this is over," her eyes were wet, her voice tender, "we shall begin anew. It will be a fresh start, a better start for both of us." The sudden warmth caught him off guard. Was this her true self? Had the woman he had grown to know only been a fiction? "A new start," he whispered. His voice was still nothing more than a rasp. Lack of sleep had not improved it. She gave a faint smile and released his hand. He took his place near the star crystal. There was nothing left to do but wait. She began to chant, slowly at first, but with building speed. It was a language she had not taught him. It could have been her original tongue, or perhaps it was the language of the sigils themselves. There was so much he did not know. She had taught him of creation and destruction, the basics of combining sigils for desired effects, but there was much she had not even hinted at. Hers was skill amassed over several stolen lifetimes. His amounted to little more than parlor tricks and illusion. The first phase of the spell was beginning. The vat of blood that was wired into her segment had begun to bubble and boil. The life that was in the blood provided fuel to the process. Her voice thundered on with its chanting. It came from everywhere and nowhere, even as her current body's mouth ceased its motion and the star crystal began to glow. Its light was dim and gentle at first, but quickly burned with a ferocity that blinded. The chanting voice echoed off the walls at a volume that Demetrius felt in his bones. The chamber reeked of blood, death, and rebirth. The crone had left her body for the crystal. The first phase was complete. Soon the girl's light would be coaxed into the empty husk, and the crone would be young once more. Demetrius watched and waited. The voice faltered, continued, and faltered again. Demetrius dared a smile. "Something is wrong," roared the voice that came from everywhere and nowhere. "Something is wrong," echoed the raspy voice of Demetrius Tate. "Several things." "What have you done?" roared the voice, full of anger and just a hint of fear. "I think I might have killed you." It was a whisper. He hoped it was the truth, dreaded it was the truth. Maybe it wasn't. Either way, his fate would be sealed. "What have you done?" repeated the voice. It was quieter this time, the fear more pronounced. The star crystal's radiance had dimmed ever so slightly. "I have remembered." It was Demetrius's turn to be angry, and his voice dripped venom. "Skills taught to me long ago. Did you know that with proper training and the right teacher, braided rope can be undone fast enough to look like magic? It turns out the same is true for silver wiring. It seems your precious leads aren't attached to anything." "When?" The voice was softer still, the glow fading. What had been as bright as the sun was now a mere torch. "As you inspected the crystal, it took only a moment, and you had no reason to doubt your pet." Demetrius's voice was full of mockery. He could feel his triumph and wished to relish in it. But that was just a backup. Here's another reason your spell never worked. He struck the bloody well that was the vat connected to the girl's table. There was a splash as he punctured the layer of thick paper that formed a lining just under the lip of the vat. What had seemed full was really no deeper than the first joint of his finger. Your teaching, stretching and changing paper all day, made a nice stopper, but the best part? It wasn't even blood. He advanced on the crystal. He hoped she could see him from the eyeless globe. Did you know that cherry tulip petals, when steeped in boiling water, can give the water the look of blood? Guess who taught me that? You wanted to learn magic. I taught you magic. Real magic. The voice was desperate, pleading. The light in the crystal was diminishing. It was you that day, wasn't it? Your magic fueling the argument, turning anger to hate that led to violence and death. Your magic killed him. Your prayer brought me. Destroyed to create. That was the cost. The voice screeched out, but was barely louder than a whisper. Still, the blow it delivered was a powerful one. Demetrius sat down, hard. His legs had lost their strength. Can't go back. The voice was distant, ghostly, fading in and out. Can't find body. Oh, he was barely paying attention. He was trying to remember the name of his former teacher. Trying to decide if it was his fault his teacher had been killed. I added two sigils before I finished the vat with the pig's blood. No return. He couldn't help but smile. He wasn't sure if his little change would work. It looked like it did. The glow had faded. Now it simply looked like there were a handful of fireflies dancing inside the globe. Soon, those two died out. Demetrius sat on the warm stone. Relief rushed through him, but it was mixed with despair. He shuddered, and the shudders turned into sobs. As the tears faded, exhaustion overtook him, and he drifted to sleep. He awoke to the sound of the girl shouting at him. The spells keeping her still and silent had worn off, but she was still strapped down to the wooden table. Wearily, he pulled himself up off the stone floor and made his way to the table. He thought about giving her a warning about not striking him should he release her, and then he saw how her struggles against the tight leather straps had drawn blood at her wrists and ankles. He decided that if she needed to take any revenge against him, then that was her right. He freed one wrist and braced for an attack that didn't come. Her eyes were full of distrust and some loathing. But there was no fear in them. He didn't have the energy to figure out if that was good or bad for him. He loosened the strap around her other arm. She went to work on the strap about her middle, and he freed one leg. He backed away from the table as she removed the final strap. She sat up and stared at him. He tried to meet her gaze, but could not. The silence hung heavy in the muggy room. Was she your mother? The question caught him off guard. He was surprised that he had to think about the answer. No, she was... How could he describe their relationship? Master? Kidnapper? Jailer? Teacher? Somehow, they were all true. She kept me here. You killed her. His eyes turned to the star crystal. He thought of the dancing fireflies that were inside of it. He had his doubts. Yes, I killed her. Catherine rubbed her feet, massaging out the pinpricks of numbness. I've been missing for a day. My family is likely searching for me. When I find them, I hope we burn this house to the ground. You shouldn't be here when we come back. He nodded and watched as she stood. She was unsteady, but kept her footing. She walked with a pained limp. The leather straps must have cut deep. The limp and the thin nightgown made her look fragile. Your clothes are still upstairs. You should probably put them on before you go. She had suffered enough evils. He didn't want her tempting fate on the road home. She left the chamber. He wondered if she would take his advice. He looked at the star crystal and wondered what it housed. Catherine returned to the chamber fully dressed. She had a nagging concern about the strange skeletal boy. He had attacked her, taken her to this hideous place. She had almost died, and he had assisted in that plot. But he had also saved her, and she couldn't shake the feeling that he was a victim of the old crone as well. But the chamber was empty, save for the crone's former body. Another victim. The boy was gone. It was probably for the best. If her family found him, it would not go well for him. Within the hour, she was reunited with her family, and before night fell, the crone's house had been set ablaze. No one knew much of the woman who had lived there. She had kept to herself. The family kept Catherine's story quiet. A neighbor asked why the house was being torched. "Plague," Catherine's father replied. No one thought to question him. In the end, she kept the boy a secret as well. That night, Demetrius watched a fire burn in the distance. He had walked as far as he could. He didn't know where he was going or how he would get there. His only possessions were his clothes and the star crystal. In the distant fire, something collapsed, sending a spray of sparks into the night air. The sparks fluttered and danced on the wind. They looked like fireflies twinkling. He lay down on the soft grass around him and looked into the endless stars above. The smells of nature were around him, so different from the muggy chambers he had survived. He could recognize the aroma of kingflower, lover's lips, and widow's foil. Demetrius smiled as he wondered if the next town would need any magic potions.
That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. Deadly Troubadours is now available as an ebook from Smashwords.com, Amazon.com, and Apple's online store. If you want to know more about me, Brent Thomas, you can visit my website at DeadlyTroubadour.com. You can also like me on Facebook
by searching for the Brent Thomas author page.
This podcast is available on iTunes, so if you have a moment, please rate and review the show. While you are there, why not check out my other podcasts, Comics League International and Living Japan. If you want to contact me, email me at deadlytroubadour@gmail.com or follow me on Twitter at deadtroubadour.
The best way to support me and my work is on patreon.com/Brent Thomas. Even a pledge of $1 a month can make a real difference. Thank you for listening. Please tell your friends. And you know what? Have a great day.